It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, a 25-minute roundtable discussion, and this is our first full episode, and of course, we're previewing the 2024 NFL season. I'm Ben Ostro, the founder and editor-in-chief of Football Zebras, joined by Mark Schultz, senior editor. Our contributing writer and analyst is Chris Soibert and Patrick Weber, who is also a contributing writer. Let's start this right off the bat. There's not very many rule changes outside of replay this year, but the one rule change is a big one, modifying the kickoff. We have a post on all the details of the rule with the kicker kicking over the formations and targeting the landing zone or the end zone. So we've had 3 weeks of trials. What are your takeaways as we enter week one? And I'll start with you, Mark.
Well, they wanted to make a big change, and I don't think we're going to see that much effect. I think they wanted to say, oh, the kickoff is just a touchback and it's boring, so let's try and add a little spice to the kickoff with these new rules. I think teams are going to say, you know what? We'll take it at the 30, boom that thing into the end zone and be done with it. So the change that they were hoping for, I don't know if we're going to see it or not. The NFL doesn't like the traditional kickoff, and I don't think football likes the traditional kickoff because there are too many full-speed crashes out there on the field. Legal, but very, very hard-hitting. This is another way for the NFL to try and make the kickoff safer. It would not surprise me if in the next 10 to 12 years, maybe beginning at the high school level and working up, the kickoff goes away. To make a long answer even longer, I don't think this rule is going to have the effect the NFL wants.
What'd you see, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, the first few games I've seen, I kind of agree with Mark, is I think the returners are probably doing a better job than the defensive coordinators would want them to. They are getting pretty good run backs. So, yeah, I think if they continue to do that, I think they're just going to kick it into the end zone and take it at the 30. But I do think it's a much more exciting play. They are getting more, you know, returns, at least in the preseason. But they're going to go back and forth between the different, you know, special teams coordinators to figure out what they want to do. And unfortunately, they might end up just punting it in the end zone and just taking it at the 32.
Yeah, for me, you know, I think I might be a little more interested to see what happens over the first few weeks of the regular season to see kind of – you always get that impression that in the preseason maybe teams aren't really showing their hand. So might have a different opinion in a few weeks. But to Mark's point, I think with the touchback only at the 30 – I think there'll be plenty of teams just content to take that. And, you know, until they make the touchback a little more punishing, probably not going to get the desired effect of more returns.
Yeah. And originally, the way the rule was proposed was they were going to do the 35. And so essentially, it becomes a 15-yard penalty to do a touchback. You know, the conventional touchback, if it dribbles into the end zone, then you still get the 20. But if you do it on the fly, then they add 15 to that. And I think somewhere along the way between proposal and passage, I think a bunch of coaches said that that's a little bit too much. Let's kind of rock it back maybe to the 30. So now, yes, like you say, you have teams that are taking the 30. So if the competition committee starts talking to coaches and say, look, we're seeing too many touchbacks. If this percentage keeps up, whatever that line is that they're saying they're not getting the returns that they're looking for, do coaches change the game and try and preserve the kickoff? Or do they just say, you know what, I'm going to stick with what works?
Coaches want to win. That's the first thing that they're going to think about. It's not going to be, oh, let me see if I can do the NFL a solid and make the game exciting. Coaches want to win.
Yeah, I think when you have a really good returner when, you know, the players are only, you know, 5 or 10 yards apart, right, and they immediately engage, they can pick their hole and get through really easily. And I think that's where I think on the kickoff side, they get really scared about, you know, setting that up. I mean, these are the top of the top athletes in the world, and, you know, it's a big field for them to find a hole and get a touchdown. So I think they're going to be certainly worried about that.
Yeah, Mark, you took the words right out of my mouth with the coaches are going to do what they want, what they can to win. And until the rules force them to play a certain way to increase their winning chances, they are going to play the way they want.
Well, we saw a whole preseason of different tactics tried out. Both coaches and officials are kind of seeing how this all works. I have a sense that once we kick off week one, we're not going to see the same things that we saw in preseason because nobody's tipping their hand. So we could see a whole lot of mortar kicks that land at the two and dribble into the end zone. And now the opponent's got to make receiving team's got to make a decision there. They're going to down it or return it. So I think that basically what we can look at from the preseason, interesting information, but it's all going to change.
And we say so many times we throw out, well, let's just do away with the kickoffs. Not to get too far into the weeds on the business side, but you have the Players Association says, well, wait a minute, this is going to mess with some of our members, namely our kickers and our return specialists. So again, we can just say, well, the NFL could wave a wand and do away with kickoffs in 10, 15 years, but it's going to be a lot more difficult than that. And this rule is going to try to keep the kickoffs for a while, and we'll see how effective it is.
Let me start with Pat on this one, just to kind of throw this out. So obviously, you know, we're not seeing this type of kickoff at lower levels. But from what we've been led to believe is they're kind of changing the mechanics of the kickoff to be like a regular scrimmage play. I mean, yeah, you essentially have a little bit of separation between the lines there. But roughly, you're going to be looking at a scrimmage play in essence. So I'm just kind of looking at this mechanically, you know, how do you shift the focus from the traditional kickoff to now this modified kickoff? Because if it's successful at the NFL, it is definitely trickling down.
I think that would be very difficult to cover in 5-man in high school. I can say that. There's a lot of things to look at, and it definitely helps to have 7 guys in the field.
And that's an excellent point, because it goes back to our ongoing issue of officiating shortages that we sometimes seem to forget when we start talking about 7-man, 8-man mechanics, or, you know, crews of 8 at the college level, at the upper levels there. There's not that luxury going all the way down. And 5 or even 4, you know, you're going to be struggling to keep tabs on all of those elements.
And I think the other thing is, you know, high school kickers aren't nearly as accurate as NFL kickers, right, in the landing zone. So they're going to have to do some big modifications as far as the size of the landing zone, moving the kickers probably forward. Now, I think, again, the general premise of having, you know, offense and defense or, you know, closer to each other may trickle down, but I think it's going to be a significantly different sort of landscape if they try to bring that down. And I do think there'll be significant pushback from high schools and NFHS to make that change. You know,
in small high schools where I officiate sometimes, we have a kickoff and the kicker is lucky to get it to the 20-yard line in the air. So yes, it is definitely a different skill set from Friday night to Sunday afternoon.
And that's the thing is, yeah, we're looking at a complex formation that somewhere in the country, you know, somebody's getting beamed in the back of the head with a kickoff. So, you know, it is going to take probably a few steps to get it there and see. And yeah, you might wind up moving that ball forward. And now it's actually a skill shot where it's like the kicker is, because they're closer, they are making a determination from their ability as to whether or not it lands in that landing zone or the end zone. So you just scale it up to say, okay, well, what would it take for this skill level to be in that decision area? And then, of course, then you add safeties to the mix, and it throws everything haywire. But and I'm interested to see. I posed the question, but I'd like to find out what's going to happen if there's a bunch of penalties after a try. One of them's a taunting foul, and then in the discussion there, an official gets bumped. So now you got 2 15s. Now you've got the kicker right at the edge of the setup zone. There's nothing in the rule book that says that they're not just going to kick it right from there anyway. So we could be in for some very interesting situations once everything plays out. That's the other interesting part, is now we've taken out the most of the carryover, any of these bridge fouls that come from a scoring play to the kickoff. Now they have to be enforced on the extra point. So now that really kind of changes a lot of the dynamic there. Now you wind up with a play that if there's a defensive foul on the score, now they're going to absolutely, they're forced to enforce it on the try. So probably we're going to see more two-point shots at this point.
For sure, if there's a foul on a scoring play, I remember, I don't know if it was an NFL game or a college game, where the scoring team had just, they scored and then they went berserk. There was some type of fight after the try or lots of unsportsmanlike conduct. They ended up kicking off from their own 10-yard line. Happened a couple years ago, but yes.
I've seen the 10. Yeah, and I did some work with quirky research to try and pull up some of these things for a post. We've seen them from the 10. We've seen them from the plus 35, you know, where it's all the way on the other side of the 50. And, yeah, it's just a squib kick to the end zone. Those penalties will stack if it's on A on the after the try. If, you know, you got the scoring team committing a post-score foul, that's going to push that kickoff back. And, yeah, so that you're going to have a kicker going from the 10, possibly, all the way to the landing zone at the 20 at the other side. They already did a few. There were a couple of safeties, and everything still stays in the same zones there. There's just a lot of things that we just haven't seen yet in preseason that once they come up in the regular season, I think there's going to be a lot of noise. Let's pivot to mechanics on the field. And this is where we're probably going to lose a few listeners, and a few others just sat up straight in their seats. So the first thing we've seen is the end of the move with purpose mechanics, which was a well-intentioned mechanic to stay in place and it just take a wider field of view without being affected by movement. Chris had an excellent description of some of the issues that arose last year, and that post is on our site. Second thing that we saw in preseason, we had several crews working deliberately shorthanded in a six official mechanics. We got to break off of that six man mechanics. It's six officials and gives each crew an emergency white half that gives them an entire half to get some snaps in. So between those two things in preseason, we saw a couple of things that were already a remarkable change from what we've seen in the past.
For sure. And Chris can break down move with purpose much better than I can. But I think I remarked offline to you guys that seeing the first preseason game and the officials running with the play, it almost was like they were running with joy, almost like one of those animals that were rescued from a zoo and they were set free in their own habitat again, and they were just running with excitement. I think they're pleased that the move with purpose is over.
Yeah, and like Ben mentioned, it was well-intentioned, right? I mean, it is a fact that if you are stationary, you can see things a lot better than if you're moving. But it did seem like move with purpose was never move with purpose, basically, where they got themselves into some big trouble by and some people actually got injured, right? Some of them got run over because they were not moving out of the way because they were so intent on officiating with that edict of not moving while they're viewing a play. So, you know, it's funny because, you know, I'm one of those nerds that watches, you know, NFL games, and while I watch the game, I watch the officials too. And I was wondering if that also would trickle down a little bit to the, you know, the college and the high school level. But, you know, we, especially at high school, we don't have replay, the luxury of replay. And I think that's part of the reason they were able and they wanted to implement this is because, hey, you get beat to the goal line, no big deal. We have cameras everywhere and they can sort of observe for them. But no, I completely agree with Mark, and watching the deep wings running with the play, they were let free. And I think the officials are happy that that move with purpose is gone.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I think there are a lot of people, you know, willing to try what obviously everyone's going to do what their boss tells them. You know, it came from a good place, but I think most are happy to be back to officiating the way they've been officiating their whole lives.
That's one of the things is, you take somebody out of their, you know, it's essentially what Mark says is you put the horse in the barn and you just let him sit there, and then you fly open the gate and he starts running, because that's what he's meant to do. So I definitely see a lot of improvement in the, yeah. And back to Chris's point, there were injuries that we could absolutely pin right on the fact that people were out of position. I don't have the officiating background. I never got onto the field, but I did work sideline camera for TV once. And when you're focused on one direction, you're not looking at what's coming you the other way. And there was a couple of times where I got clipped at the sideline there. And then we saw a couple of other things where it just looked like blown coverage because you had a back judge that just looked like he was waiting for a bus and it just went right past him. Yeah, he was there to catch the pass and to check on the three elements of the pass and possession, but now everything else that was part of that run and whether or not he crossed the goal with the ball, there's nobody there because he's well behind the play. Let's look at the other part of the preseason. Crews working shorthanded. There was quite a few of them, and some names that we have seen before. And as we've moved along, we've added more and more to it. We at least got to see the emergency referee for pretty much every crew and to see them adapt to six official mechanics. So anything that you saw that jumped out at you in the last preseason week?
Well, it's always very neat to see new people don the white hat and see what they look like and what they sound like when they turn their microphone on and announce a play. And in 30 years, I can think of three times that a referee has had to leave a game or wasn't able to start. In 1989, Bob McElwee became ill and couldn't do the game at all, and Tom White substituted for him. In the early 2000s, Bernie Kukard just got viciously blocked in the back on a broken play, and Gene Steratore came in from field judge to fill in. And a year or two ago, Tony Correnti fell down or got bumped down, and he had to go to the locker room for 5-10 minutes and came back, and Todd Pruko had to come in. Thing is, when a referee leaves, it's a very specialty position, and it's very technical, and it's good that these guys have practice.
Yeah, you know, I think it's great to see them practice shorthanded. I know on the high school side, we work a lot of underclass games short, so you kind of get used to it. But I think on the college side, we maybe don't do enough of that to... I mean, sometimes it's hard to even just work with your normal crew for a scrimmage or, you know, some type of preseason snaps. But it, you know, getting used to the potential challenge of working shorthanded is a very good thing to practice.
And one of the nice things was the TV network seemed to pick up on it across the board. And, you know, we were debating internally, was that deliberately communicated to them by the NFL as a more transparent way of saying, hey, this is what we're doing with our officials. You know, maybe talk about it and explain to the viewers what's going on, because I think whether it was perusing Twitter or whatever, you know, some people were saying, hey, why are we missing a line judge in this game, or why are we missing some other position in this game? And the fact that the TV commentators were pretty much across the board talking about it was a good sign and a welcome change, I think, from the past.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting, too. You know, I think on the college side, if we go shorthanded, we pretty much always take out the back judge and fill in. It's interesting to see how the NFL crews do it a little differently at times.
And that's one thing that is hard to convey when a situation does present itself. And let me just jump in and add one to Mark's list there. We did have Johnny Greer go down in a game, and now I'm really trying to pick my brain to remember who jumped in.
Scott Green.
That was Scott Green. That's right. Yeah, he went in for about a snap or two and something pulled. So, I mean, I've heard various stories that maybe he shouldn't have even been out there to begin with, but, you know, he did at least one snap, and that's all it takes to get the check. So you're starting to see, yeah, the ability of these crews to shift around in various ways. There isn't one template, and I think that's a good thing because everybody carries different strengths into the NFL. So it's not just going to be that, okay, well, if this situation exists, then this is what you do. I think that generally, I mean, you obviously don't leave the referee position free. And I think you always keep somebody as an umpire and the down judge. And I think from there, everything else is kind of flexible, where you can have somebody just work the sideline. You know, you could have your down judge work the entire sideline, or maybe you have the field judge take over the vacancy and the line judge, which we saw a couple of those come up. Yeah, usually you'll see also the back judge is sacrificed first, but different crews do it differently. So there's some give and take there. You know, there might be a better perspective there for some of the line stuff at the snap to have somebody, you know, right in the center field area there. And it takes a lot of adapting, because if you have somebody riding the sideline, well, you don't want them deep on a third and one. You want them right up on the line in that case. So they're not going to be working as a field judge. We need two sets of eyes on the line to, you know, because the line of gain is threatened. It's one of those things that not only is it giving practice for the crew, but it also gives a lot of tape for everybody to kind of look at. Okay, they did it this way. They did it this way. Here's something I saw. Here's something I saw here. So there's a learning curve for crews, and you know, we have newer officials in here. So everybody's learning from what each other has done. I like the fact that there's not one template, but you know, I don't know. Maybe there's other opinions on that.
I think sometimes they sacrifice the line judge position because they want to field, side, and back judge if it's a pass-heavy team.
I mean, the reality is the NFL, they push the ball downfield a lot more than we see in high school or D3 and things like that. And you want to have more guys deep, probably, to get. I mean, those are big calls if you have passes down the field that you want eyes on. So I mean, I get it. It's just interesting to see, and I think working to the crew's strengths is also the best thing to do. Like, why it makes more sense to have fewer guys work out of position than to move everybody around, and now you have four guys working out of position, three guys working out of position, and now you're feeling shorthanded, maybe even more.
Well, and that wraps up our first episode. Many thanks to Mark Schultz, Chris Soibert, Pat Weber. We'll be dropping a new episode every Tuesday throughout the season. And please share this. Get the word out. We are appointment listening during your lunch break. 25-minute podcast every Tuesday. You can listen on the site, or you can find us and favorite us on your preferred podcast platform. Many thanks for listening, and we will be back to recap what we saw in week 1 in our next episode.